Full disclosure, I've been a Disney animation nerd for a very long time, and we had all the VHSs on our shelves before we had kids. and our friends would come over and go, do you have kids, nephews? What's going on?
My retirement account thanks you.
Happy New Year. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 213, Epic Two-Parter. This week's podcast, the first podcast of 2011, is a continuation of last week's podcast, the conclusion of my lengthy conversation with Roy Conley, the producer of Disney's 50th animated feature, Tangled. Last week, Roy talked about the tangled nature of the Rapunzel story and of his team's storytelling, and he also explained what a film producer does and how his theater background contributes to his work today. He also talked about Pixar founder and now head of Disney, John Lasseter, one of the executive producers of Tangled. This week, Roy talks about the film's other executive producer, Glenn Keane, and how in Tangled they try to take computer animation to the next level. Glenn Keane, also a Disney animator, comes from a family of cartoonists. His father did Bill Keane, Family Circus. What did he do? What was his goal with this movie?
Well, you know, Glenn started on this movie quite a while ago. I mean, in fact, it was interesting because I ran our Paris studio from 1995 to 1998, and Glenn came out there in 1996 to do Tarzan. Right. And while I was finishing up work on Hercules, uh-huh. Glenn had this crazy idea that he wanted to take Rapunzel off the shelf, because Rapunzel actually has been around since the early 40s.
As a Disney idea?
As a Disney project, yes, yeah. As a potential project. Mm-hmm. And they were always looking for a way into the story. It's a very difficult story to tell. You know, when you have someone locked in a tower, there's not a lot of physical action that goes on.
Well, and also in a way that hasn't been told by other projects like Sleeping Beauty.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Well, you know, that's funny because Sleeping Beauty was actually on the shelves back in that day too.
Okay.
And it took until 1992 before that was completed. Glenn. Yeah. So Glenn and I actually worked on an early version, some concepts for Rapunzel. At that time, it was going to be the Rapunzel story, and Glenn, he was taken with the idea of this story.
Yeah.
Jump ahead, I come back to the States, I produce Treasure Planet, Glenn comes back over to the States, he does the lead character in Treasure Planet.
Right.
And then he begins working with several artists in the studio to try and come up with the story on this. And it just so happened that at that point he had the choice of did he want to pursue it in hand-drawn or did he want to pursue it in CG?
Computer generated.
Yes.
Like the Pixar movies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And at that point he decided that he actually wanted to invest in CG, and he wanted to see if he could help bring CG to another level. And he wanted to, because they're,
Explain what you mean by that, because I think I know what you mean by that, but it's like computer generation, that's the next level.
Yeah.
But he wants...
No. He wanted to see if he could take computer generation into utilizing some of the concepts that the Nine Old Men, the original Disney, Nine Old Men who were the
original Disney animators.
Those guys who, made Pinocchio and Snow White and whatnot.
And created the template for all of filmed all of film animation.
The illusion of life, Frank and Ollie and, Mark Davis and, just these amazingly brilliant guys that were the... So, he started playing around with that, and then finally, when in 2006, I came back onto the project and worked with Glenn, and then in 2008 is when Nathan and Byron came on to direct it.
Okay,
and Glenn then took on a supervising animation role, and Glenn and John Kars, a brilliant 3D animator, and Clay Cadis, another really amazing animator in the sense that he's a brilliant 3D animator and a hand-drawn animator. So there was this kind of bridge that we were trying to build from hand-drawn, which is what Glenn does,
right,
to, you know, through Clay, who was hand-drawn and CG, and then John, who was like CG.
Right.
And, you know, we put together a process in which literally we would go into the room with all the animators each day and twice a day take a look at what they were doing. Uh-huh. Glenn sat at an instrument called a Cintiq, which is literally a, it's like a Wacom tablet, but it's you can project an image on it.
Oh.
And you can actually draw on the image.
Ooh.
So Glenn would draw on top of the CG work.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically, you know, talking about the specific aspects of 2D that make 2D so appealing.
Uh-huh.
And we were able to transfer those elements into the CG.
Right.
And that's
right.
Why I think the animation in this film is probably, you know, dare I say, I think it's the most beautiful animated CG film out there right
it's,
now.
It's enormously beautiful, and it doesn't have the hard textures of a Pixar movie, and these are human characters carbon-based characters.
Well, and to the Pixar aspect, I mean, we looked at Ratatouille and we looked at The Incredibles, which I think are two amazing, you know, but for human animation, they lead the way, and, you know, they led the way, and we wanted to get to that level.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that if it were not for that, we wouldn't have gotten to where we are.
Well, and it's so far beyond the dead-eyed motion capture animated, which is just still terrible.
Yeah.
And I remember when The Incredibles came out around the same time as The Polar Express. Mm. And Polar Express was trying to be, quote unquote, realistic. And it looked horrible. Mm. And Incredibles wasn't realistic at all. And those were not real body shapes of those characters. Those were not realistic. And yet they were so moving. And the other thing that I think you took from The Incredibles and added so well in Tangled, and maybe you did it as a crass ploy to get the boys, but the action sequences are really gripping.
Yeah.
And there's a, I don't want to give it away, but there's a sequence with water.
That's pretty amazing.
It's pretty amazing and scary. It's like the tsunami in Hereafter. I mean, or in Titanic.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just really like, oh my God, how did they do that? I'm sitting here nervous in the audience.
It was funny. I mean, just in response to crass ploy, you know, you have three boys making this film. You know,
it's right.
Byron, myself, and we, you know, we basically make these stories for ourselves and our families and our kids and our friends.
Yeah.
So you know. We never, you know, we just make them for us.
Yeah, right.
You know, and then I think the for me, what I love about the animation is the economy, right? I mean, I think so much animation out there right now can be it's just over animated.
Mm.
And if there are scenes here where there is just an eyelid moving or just a, you know, a brow just tweaks to the, to, you know, a little point, and you, and that's, to me, you know, a great thing in animation is when the littlest movement means the most.
Well, and you mentioned the eyes. I think it's one of the reasons I've never much cared for the Don Bluth kinds of films, or even the one we did, the Renew Shakespeare Company did voices in. We were in Balto.
Oh,
we were some
really?
Voices
I didn't
in
really
Balto,
remember.
And. It's the eyes. They don't make the, or even really in the DreamWorks movies, the eyes aren't big enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, and the eyes are the windows to the soul, right?
Yeah.
And you can't tell who the character is if you can't see their eyes.
You just quoted Glenn Keane.
Did I?
Yes. No. Glenn always says that the eyes are the window to the soul. And, you know, we had the design on there. We had, you know, Glenn was very instrumental in the design of our characters. Fellow by the name of Shiyun Kim and Jin Kim,
mm-hmm.
They're not related, but they, but the three of those guys worked on our major characters, and It's true. You know, the other thing, you know, we have an amazing technical department, and I actually hate to call them a technical department because they're artists in their own right. And we had this thing called the Eye Initiative because we wanted to get more life in eyes. And that work is reflected in our film. You know, and then there's the hair. Yeah, the hair is a minor miracle because people may not know this, but they're the two most difficult things to do in CG animation, it's cloth and hair. I mean, you know, you never want to touch the hair. You always want to keep the hair short cropped. You never want to, you know, if it can be a shell, so much the better. But what we've done in the progression of artistry and technology in terms of bringing hair to life, it's stunning. And not just Rapunzel's hair, which, you know, is magic in its own way. You've got the 70 feet, but the horse, Flynn.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you know, he's got, I wish I had hair like his. And then Mother Gothel.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Mother Gothel's hair is really, you know, just stunning.
She takes her hood off when she's come back, and her hair bounces out. It's lovely. She's a lovely character. And as she was performing, I was going, I can see the Broadway musical version of this play.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure how they do.
We'll see what happens with that.
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Will Wheaton. I know, I can't believe it either. And you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you see the RSC? You can see us in Pittsburgh, where we are performing The Complete World of Sports Abridged. After this, we'll be heading down to Athens, Georgia, Decatur, and Birmingham, Alabama. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Roy Conley as we continue chatting about changing technologies.
You're inventing technologies to tell your stories. Because they couldn't make Finding Nemo until they figured out how to do water. And the hair on Monsters, Inc. And you guys have taken it now to the next level. Yeah.
Well, I think that's the key to this, to both studios, is art drives the technology.
Yeah.
You know, you have a need, and these guys, you know, there's a fellow by the name of Chuck Tappan who does a lot of our look stuff. He refers to it as techno-artistic. I think it's a great term. It's a great term. And, you know, working with these guys, you know, I walk in the building every day knowing that I'm working with the best people in the industry.
Yeah.
Well, and I was going to ask you that. We're recording this on the last day of work before the Christmas holidays. Yeah. You guys have just had your Christmas party. You just had an auction featuring everybody in the building created Christmas ornaments that you auctioned off to raise money.
I have Maximus.
Oh, that's awesome. To raise money for the SPCA. I mean, the office craft projects around this building are probably slightly better
than the average office building.
It's terrible because I feel, you know, I mean, when it comes to actually the watching these guys create, it's, you know, I mean, the from a visual standpoint and from a craft standpoint, it's, you know, I feel so small. But then, you know, people don't point as well as I point. I can get over there and do that. Right. You know, that's what I
get. Me that coffee now.
Now, damn it. Yeah. What's great about my job and working with this, you know, animation is like a repertory theater, you know, and particularly when you're in the early stages of developing a story, you get to do scratch voices. And in fact, I do a little voice in Tangled, so that's kind of fun. my acting comes in handy.
Yeah.
And, you know, quite frankly, it's the understanding of performance, it's the understanding of directing, it's the understanding of design, it's the understanding of human interaction that makes my job what my job is. And, you know, I'm very, very lucky because I've been in some very great places through my career.
Yeah.
And it's always great to be working with better people than you.
you know, Rapunzel is the kind of the culmination of your career. Not the culmination. Rapunzel's the highlight.
Not.
Yeah,
hopefully not.
Rapunzel's the highlight so far of your career. What's the difference between Rapunzel and, say, Treasure Planet, which I think was really underrated?
No, I would say so.
Yeah.
You know, it's for me. You know, this is what I'm so proud of in terms of my career, because I worked. You know, my initial film was Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah, yeah.
Then Treasure Planet, and now Tangled. And I was in France I was back in June, promoting the film, getting awareness and getting the marketing teams aligned. And when I did a presentation, and a young French guy came up to me and said, Monsieur Conley, it is a pleasure to meet you. Your films are so beautiful. And my heart just kind of like, you know, took an extra beat. And it is true. I mean, I've been very lucky. I think what Treasure Planet taught me to do was, you know, make a beautiful film. Mm. And, you know, it did not receive the accolades that this film is getting.
Right.
But you know, I definitely. It's interesting. This film for me, from the third week that Byron and Nathan came on, I knew it was going to be big, because I could see within them there was a story to tell, and it's just been special all the way along. And my relationship with the directors, my relationship. I'm working with Dave Getz, who is the art director that I worked with in Hunchback of Notre Dame. A brilliant guy, Steve Goldberg, my visual effects. You know, it always comes down to the team. My associate producer Amy Scribner, you know, my production manager, my assistant Gail Carter, who, you know, keeps my life sane.
Right.
You know, it's just the right team, and you make the film, you throw the dice, and then to actually get the accolades that we've been getting.
Yeah.
It's like the icing on the cake.
Well, and say what you want about Treasure Planet, you couldn't have made this movie without having made that one.
Oh yeah, for me, everything is everything. You build off everything.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if it hadn't been for my theatrical upbringing, you know, I mean, I was very fortunate when I was working at the Taper, because I was involved with the first production of Angels in America. I was involved with the first production of Kentucky Cycle. I was involved with the first production of Jelly's Last Jam. You know, so, you know, I mean, I think I worked on 3 Pulitzer Prize winning plays and, you know, 4 Tony Award winning plays while I was at the Taper. And, you know, and then a piece that I produced at the Getty Museum is what got me the job at Disney, because a bunch of Disney execs saw something that I produced and they approached me and said, would you be interested in doing animation?
Right.
And it was the right time for a career move.
Yeah.
So, you know, everything that you do builds to what, you know, and I have to say, I feel as an animation producer at the top of my game right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do. I mean, you know, you know, I came not knowing anything about animation, but I knew about script development, I knew about design, I knew about, you know, how to
build team.
Teams.
Yeah.
I knew that. I mean, so I knew all the elements of a production, and I knew all the elements of script development.
Yeah.
What I didn't know is how you make an animated film.
Yeah.
So, you know, during Hunchback of Notre Dame, I would literally work 8 hours a day with, you know, the story team, with the writers, with the designers, the viz dev guys. And then 8 hours at night, I read The Illusion of Life. I looked at every video that our library has here of every animator, you know, every animator's speech that they'd ever given. And, you know, you get through one and you go, I kind of know. And then, you know, you go to your second one, and you know a little bit more. And the great thing about animation is you really never know it all. I mean, the technology continues to change. You know, when I started, we were cutting film with a razor blade.
Right.
And we were cutting sound with a, you know, two little handles going root, 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 and then cutting the film or the sound. And
right.
Now it's that's all become digital.
Yeah.
You know, the storytelling, you know, we now draw on Cintiq tablets. And so it's, you know, you're using Photoshop instead of a pencil.
Right, right.
But it's, you know, the tools change. But that whole concept of how to tell a story, you just keep honing that and honing that and honing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a continual lifelong quest.
That's it for this week's Reduce Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your advanced technology via email to feedback@reduceshakespeare.com. You can post comments on our website podcast page, and you can post reviews at our podcast page on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website, reduceshakespeare.com, and our Reduce Shakespeare Company fan page at facebook.com. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, ReduceShakespeare.com. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, wide-eyed ingenue Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Philip Caro. No reason, it's just random. Thanks to Will Wheaton from Star Trek The Next Generation and the movie Stand By Me. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 213-639th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
I've been with Disney now, it's about 17 and a half years, and I never get bored.
Yeah.
I never get bored. And, you know, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure walking in the studio every day. When I was running the Paris studio, it was really a pleasure because the walk to work was even better than getting to work because you were in Paris, you know? But, no, I adore this institution. I think we're in a really great space right now. I think John has helped revitalize. I think we needed to come in and kind of reawaken the roots. And I just feel like, you know, we're well on our way to making some really great movies over the next decade.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less. So much less.